A child's fear is absolute and immediate. It's life and death. It's black and white. It's not like an adult's fear, which is gray and ongoing. Storyteller Kevin Kling brings us this tale of fear as a child.
Recess. Miss Jensen's fifth grade class were behind the brick pump house. My 35-cent lunch money has just bought a viewing of Mary Gilligan's appendix scar. It's my first experience with performance art, and it has left me challenged. All of a sudden, my best friend Earl rounds the corner with a look of terror that only a kid with red hair and white eyebrows can get. He's screaming, "We're dead men!" and stomping on the end of his shadow, brandishing two baseball bats as a girl named Katie. As I turn to run, I feel the impact of the bat against the back of my head. I feel a cold wave rush forward and a low hum in my ears. A blue-black tunnel forms around my vision, and the light at the end gets smaller and smaller. And then I pass out. The next day, Mr. Felber, the principal, announced that bats were to remain off the playground for an indefinite period of time. The last indefinite period of time was 6 months, when a kid named Mike got hit in the head with a bat while playing baseball. Everyone said that Mike was never the same after that, when in fact he was the same after that, clear into adulthood. I was lucky. When I came to, the doctor told me I had a concussion, but I'd be okay. When I got back to school, Mr. Felber announced it was nice to have me back. But I looked around the room, and I knew it was my fault there were no more bats on the playground, and it did not feel so nice to have me back. First up for show and tell, Katie shows a slideshow presentation of her brother in Vietnam. She also reads a letter he sent that was full of words that were off color, according to Miss Jensen, but Katie's allowed to continue. In her brother's letter, he said it was so hot in Vietnam, you could fry an egg on a rock. And sure enough, in one of the slides, Katie's brother is with a buddy frying an egg on a rock. Just then, Earl turns around with his little robin egg blue eyeball looking back at me, and I can tell he wants to laugh. And when your best friend wants to laugh, you want to laugh. It's a law of nature. But this was not a good time to laugh, so I suppressed it. But the laugh went searching for a weak gasket, and it finally found it in my nose, and Hank! The whole class turns around, Hank! Miss Jensen yells, "Boys!" And I look up. Katie is staring directly at me, memorizing me for later. After show and tell, we're in the hallway putting on our rubber shoes for gym class. I look down the row of lockers and see Katie's open locker, and there hanging are two baseball bats. She looks at me and smiles. Gym class. We play a game called Bombardment, a game where you throw stinky hard rubber balls at other children as hard as you can. It's part of the presidential fitness plan. And in Bombardment, Katie could have hit me a million times, but instead she stops and throws at other kids, saving me for later. After gym class, I'm waiting my turn to use the boys' room, and I know what's going to happen on the playground, and I start to imagine the feeling of that baseball bat hitting the back of my head. I start to feel the cold wave and the blue-black and the humming, and then I get a waft from the cafeteria, and fish sticks, it must be Friday, I throw up. In no time, there's the janitor there with the green stuff, zoop, 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 and he's gone. Earl says, "I'll take Kevin in the nurse's office," and on the way he says, "You can't go home." I say, "What do you mean?" He says, "You know what I mean. You throw up, it's automatic, you go home. But you can go home. You go home, and I am a dead man." So I talk the nurse out of sending me home. She can't believe it. She says, "Are you sure?" Earl says, "Yes, he's sure." So we go back to the room. Katie can't believe it either. She looks at me and smiles. Recess. I'm hiding behind the brick pump house. Mary Gilligan can have her scar. Sure enough, around the corner comes Earl with that look of terror. "We're dead men!" We burst into the flats and split up to try to confuse Katie. I look back and, she's following me. And then I remember Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. The cheetah follows the weak and the sick. My only hope now is the giant slide. I gather up all my speed and approach from the slick part of the slide. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 6, 7, 6, 7, 6, 7, whack! Heee! feet. I grab onto the side of the slide and pull myself up, and I am safe. If Katie goes up the ladder, I'll slide down the slick part. If she comes up the slick part, I'll go down the ladder. It's a cycle that can go all recess long. I stand on top of the slide. Katie hovers below. And that's when I see the Fauché Tower in the distance, a 54-story building in downtown Minneapolis, tallest building from Chicago to San Francisco, tallest building there will ever be. And if I live to the sixth grade, I'll get to see it on a field trip. I yell down to Katie, Katie, I can see Fauché Tower. And she believes me. She climbs up the ladder, and I slide down the slick part and look up to watch her with the two bats in her hands, and she's yelling, I discovered Fauché Tower. Later that night, Earl and I are walking home, and we know we're safe because Katie is now queen of the playground. I look up at the slide, and there's Mike standing up, facing the wrong way. Years later, I'm sitting on the roof of Earl's house. We can see Fauché Tower in the distance. We're putting new shingles on, and Earl is yelling at his sister below, look out down there, Mary, we're throwing shingles. We're talking tough because we've just been issued our draft cards for Vietnam. This is a rite of passage that lets you talk tough. Suddenly, Earl turns to me and he says, do you still have that cabin up north? I say, yeah. He says, do you think you could sneak me into Canada? And then I imagine Earl in Vietnam with his red hair and his white eyebrows. I knew I'd never have to go. My body was not acceptable, and I could afford to talk tough. So finally I said, yeah, Earl, it really would be frightening to have to go to Vietnam. He says, that's not why. I'm not afraid. He says, do you remember Katie's brother? I don't think he ever came back. And I said, I don't think he did either. He said, do you remember what that did to her? Do you remember what that did to Katie? Well, I'm not doing that to my sister. So I snuck Earl into Canada, and we're standing on the Canadian highway, and his thumb is out and mine's not. And I said, Earl, I don't know if I'll ever see you again. And he says, yeah, you will. I can't go through with it. So I snuck Earl back into Minnesota. And I don't know what was said between him and the government, but they decided he would go to Idaho and with a team of 7 mules mark trails in the mountains. It was supposedly a horrible job, but it turns out Earl loved it, and the mules. I haven't seen him since, but last I heard it's what he does to this day. I think of him a lot these days, and the time I watched his fear shift from black and white to gray.
Kevin Kling lives in Minnesota.